Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo. Berger. Blake. Flickery. Bonner. Botten. Brechtel. Brown. Burkhart. Bird. Campbell. Kennedy. Childers. Childers. Connolly. Kraft. Davison. Edmonds. Eklund. Esquivel. Freeman. Gay. Gingery. Goggles excused. Greer. Green. Green. Harshman. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Illaway. Yagi. Kasparic. Croker. Crone. Lockhart. Lauk. Lubno. Madden. McKim. McComey. Miller excused. Moniz. Nicholas. Patton. Peasley. Peterson. Peterson. Petroff. Korberg. Reeder. Roscoe. Roscoe. Simlick. Steward. Stubson. Teeters. Throne. Bronish. Bronish. Wallace. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker. Childers. Childers excused. Green. Harshman. Harshman. Roscoe. Harshman. Roscoe. Roscoe. 57 present, 3 excused.
We pray. Almighty and most gracious God, we come before your awesome presence with humble hearts. You are the one true, eternal God, the source of every good and perfect gift. And so it is right for us to begin this session of the legislature with prayer, to give thanks to you, to remember your blessings, to confess our sins, and to call upon your grace and mercy once again. We thank you, Heavenly Father, for your good gifts, for this fair land in which we live, for this great nation, and the liberties and prosperity we have. We thank you for national leaders in Washington, D.C., for our president and his administration, and we pray that they would all conduct themselves with holy fear, with honor, and to govern the people with truth and justice. We thank you for this great state of Wyoming, this beautiful land, its mountains, its prairies, the vast natural resources. We thank you for its generous, hardworking, honest people. And we thank you, Lord, that in your mercy you have spared us from calamity and disaster. Even as we pray for those in the South and the Midwest who are suffering from many deadly tornadoes. Give grace and peace, we pray, to those who are grieving and suffering loss. Give strength to state leaders and governors, to rescue workers, to medical personnel. Comfort the children who have lost parents and the parents who have lost children. Give to pastors and church leaders the power and wisdom to minister to the hurting and the destitute. And we remember this morning, Lord, the family of Representative Goggles in the wake of the loss of their son. Grant peace to their hearts. Guard them and keep them, we pray. And for those in this chamber Lord, I thank you that you have instituted civil government among us for our good, for the preservation and ordering of human society, for the protection of divinely ordained rights. May these servants know that they minister in your presence before your face and are ministers of God to maintain a just and merciful society of laws and freedoms. Thank you that you have not left us to ourselves, but have given us wise and prudent officials to lead us. And so, Father, I pray that these legislators would conduct themselves with honor and truth, that they would be kind and gracious in their speech and their demeanor, that they would have in view the welfare of all the people, and ultimately the glory of God in carrying out this most important and sacred work. Bless them, Father, and watch over them and their families. Keep this house, keep the Senate, keep Governor Meade and his office and this state and its people and this great nation. And remember your mercies, O Lord. For we pray in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, and for his sake, entrusting ourselves and our hearts to you, through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Representative Barbuda.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our good minority floor leader asked me to express to you folks the appreciation his family has for your thoughts and prayers during this difficult time. As you just heard, his son Francis did pass into the spirit world Friday around 10:30 p.m. Information will be coming out shortly, I think, about the services for Francis and ways you can participate in that. But they do ask for your continued thoughts and prayers during this difficult time, and want all of you to know that he loves you and is just grateful to call you all friends. And I guess it might be appropriate now to have a moment of silence in honor of Francis and the Goggles Iron Eyes family. Thank you.
up that order of business journal committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your journal committee reports that the journal of March 2nd has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Freeman, Representative Kasparik.
Messages from the Senate.
Message 215. Mr. Speaker, Senate 540, Judicial Salaries. The Senate failed to concur on the House amendments to the bills listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 15, noes 14, excused 1. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 216. Conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed the Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the House on amendments to Senate 540. The Senate conferees are Senator Nicholas, Chairman, Senator Perkins, Senator Bebout. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Representative Kasparik.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Today I have the great honor of welcoming back my granddaughter, Macy, who's going to be our page again this year. And I also have a special pleasure of introducing my son, Jason. So my favorite son and my favorite granddaughter. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir.
My privilege today to have some people from Uinta County. We have our Uinta County senior, some of our Uinta County senior citizen managers. We have Luana Benson and Chris Stringer in the back. If you guys would stand up, and they're also here for the AARP thing tonight in the U.S. Bank building at 5:30, and this little gift they give you. So it's courtesy of them and our AARP. We'd like you to welcome them.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to introduce my granddaughter, Christina Cox. She lives here in Cheyenne, and she's pursuing her education to become a teacher. Everybody, please welcome her.
Representative Ranish.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Sure.
Thank you. Today is a real special honor for me. Talk about a surprise. I get to introduce the nurses of the day. And Rhiannon and Sterlingson, okay? And the gal I haven't seen for years, I used to be on boards with her, Kim Glasscock. And they're all from Green River, Castle Rock Medical Center. Give them a great welcome.
We're at that order of business, reading and signing of enrolled acts.
House Enrolled Act Number 17, being original House Bill Number 9, an act relating to unemployment, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act Number 17, being original House Bill 9. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 18, being original House Bill 13, an act relating to property, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act Number 18, being original House Bill 13. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 19, being original House Act 40, an act relating to taxation and revenue, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act Number 19, being original House Bill 40. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act Number 20, being original House Bill 50, an act relating to insurance being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled act number 20 being original House Bill 50. I have so signed. We're at that order of business, bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 18.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Agriculture and Act relating to livestock, reimbursement for livestock.
Senate File 18, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 24.
Senate File 24, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to civil procedure, property exempt from execution.
Representative Greer.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker. Hey, I'll move second reading amendment. What I wanted to do is make sure that we understand what we're doing with these exemptions. And I realize they haven't been touched for a long time or moved. And I'm not particularly uncomfortable with the clothing, household item, tools, and so forth. What I am a little uncomfortable with is the homestead. And what we run into, it just so everyone is aware of this, is what we're talking about is the current law is $10,000 per person in that, so husband and wife, within that homestead of equity. That is after the mortgage. And to bump that up to $40,000, to me, seems to be just a little bit too much. And not to be unfriendly to consumers, however, there are a lot of creditors out there, small businesses, mom and pop businesses, that get stuck holding the bag in a bankruptcy. And I just want us to take just a minute and think about this, bumping this all the way up to $20,000. That's why I brought the amendment, which basically deletes the $20,000 and would leave it at $10,000. And I'm not seeing anybody jump up to discuss a particular issue. But again, I think we have to understand that $20,000 in a household, if you have a joint bankruptcy, is $40,000 of equity. And that's money that would be taken away from creditors that are owed in a bankruptcy situation. I would just encourage you to vote for the amendment and leave it at $10,000. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the amendment's certainly a fair topic for discussion. It does relate to an amendment, an exemption, which primarily happens in bankruptcy code. And under the bankruptcy code and within limits, states have the ability to establish what those exceptions from bankruptcy are going to be, or exemptions. And so our exemption has been $10,000 per person, $20,000. This would propose to double that. I don't have the information about how long it's been, but it's been a long, long time. The $10,000, whenever it was enacted, I'm sure if you did the present cost of money, would be far in excess of $20,000 a day. It is true that on a joint bankruptcy, a husband and wife could protect $40,000 of equity in a residence, and it's probably just a philosophical decision that people need to make about how much ought to be exempted. Bear in mind one thing that I think is really important about bankruptcies. If you look at the data on bankruptcies in this country today, you're going to find an extremely high percentage of bankruptcies that are driven by medical expenses. Medical expenses incurred for which there was no insurance. It's an amazingly high percentage of bankruptcies are the result of huge medical bills that people cannot cover. And so the issue that's before us with this amendment is how much should a husband and wife, if it's a joint bankruptcy, and it's been an unanticipated medical catastrophe for which they probably didn't have insurance, and they're looking at bills that are going to wipe them out. They're going to try to make a fresh start, free of those obligations. How much property do you want to leave them with as they try to get back on their feet? So that's the issue. Personally, $40,000 doesn't bother me a whole lot. That's $40,000 of equity. That's really not a lot in today's property market, but I suppose it's a decision for the body to make, and that's the issue.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Speaker, rising against the amendment, if you are a single-family household, that's $20,000 worth of your home, whether they can come in and take it or not. And I just, it's been since the mid-1970s since the since this has been raised. We're commensurate with what most other states do, so we thought it was appropriate to raise it. Thank you.
Your first time, second time. Second time prior to the sponsor, Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I think it's important that we have the discussion and people are just simply aware of what this particular portion of this bill does. I can understand, and it's easy to be sympathetic for folks. However, you can also be sympathetic for creditors. I mean, there are a lot of creditors that get hit in these bankruptcies that are mom-and-pop businesses where their receivables are not paid, and I just think we need to look at the fairness of it. And again, we are talking about equity. That is after the first mortgage, second mortgage, whatever the case may be. And I know it's been a long time since it's been raised, but I just would encourage you to think about this before we just move this bill along. That was the reason for my amendment, and I'd actually encourage you to support and vote for this amendment. Thank you.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 24, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 24 has failed. Senate File 24 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 34.
Senate File 34 introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the administration and government regarding Medicaid options study.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this bill. This is a good bill. This is going to help us a lot in understanding ways in which we can improve Medicaid. However, there were a few things in here I just wanted to make sure that we voted on separately that is really nothing to do with the subject matter of the bill. It has more to do with procedure and with precedents set by this body. We have a procurement policy that we operate under in the state of Wyoming, and that procurement policy ensures that all bidders or all people that wish to propose to be consultants all have an equal opportunity to submit their names and to submit their proposals. And under this bill, because we're trying to go real fast, we've taken out the requirement that they actually follow the law, that they follow the procurement law. And so what this amendment would do is take that portion out and put it back to how procurement's supposed to be done in the state of Wyoming. From my understanding, and what the testimony was in committee, was that this will only delay slightly. They have to put out an RFP. The RFP goes out for 2 weeks. Sometimes they like to go longer than that, but they're only required to do 2 weeks. It just makes sure that it's a fair and equal playing field, that all consultants that wish to put their name in will be considered. I don't think it's a good precedence to suddenly say that we're not going to follow the law because we're in a hurry. I get that we're in a hurry, but we can still make it. There's some timelines here, and we can have this ready for next year, but I still think we ought to make sure that all consultants are considered and not just do it this way. I'd urge you to vote aye on the amendment.
We are on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 34. Chairman Harvey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. You know, if we weren't under time crunch, I can see this as appropriate. But the truth of the matter is our first reporting date is before we would have a contract with a vendor. That's just pretty much how it works. We've tried this. We've worked on it. I know that that's my frustration with some of the issues I worked with last summer was, come on, you guys, can't we just get this moving? Well, we've got a process. We've got to follow the process. And I agree it's a good process with this exception. If you want to adopt this amendment, then we have to change the reporting dates. So the question is, do you want to wait another year? Do you want to wait? And particularly when you look at the next amendment coming up that adds more requirements, more things that we need to look at, the question is, are we not the policymakers? Don't we decide? Can we not make exceptions to our own rules when we understand the implications of not doing so? I would urge a no vote on this. I think that we need this information. I think if the department that oversees this program is required to come with a 2, a 4, and an 8% proposal for cutting budget, then we better know where it's going to come from. And we better have accurate data. And we better be able to answer the questions along the way. Otherwise, it's just blundering along the way that we already have in trying to make decisions based on partial information and even playing field. I could agree with that. But the question is, what do you want in the end? Do you want real data? Do you want to be able to see what these Medicaid cost savings can be? And this is not going to be one huge contract. This is going to be piecemealed work. Most of it's going to be done internally. But when they bump into a deadline, when they bump into an issue, when they bump into expertise that they don't have internally, then they're going to have to hire that out. And the question is, how fast are we going to allow them to do that to get accurate information? I would urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I'm going to encourage the body to support this amendment. You know, this was supposed to be something that was done over a year ago. It had drop-dead dates. It had this. There was urgency. A year has come and gone. And on top of that, now the budget's gone from $100,000 to $200,000, and I'm sure there's a lot of good reasons for why it's doubled. But just to say that, and I'm, you know, if we have to set some of the timelines back, I'm fine with that. But I don't know how you go about getting, in my mind, it seems like if you go out for an RFP, you have choices and you can make decisions about getting the best person. So I just don't see any compelling reason to not to make an exception as to how they would do business and how they would go out to contract. So I'm going to encourage the body to support this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip.
Anyone else for your first time? Second time before the sponsor? Mr. Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. Again, I really support this bill, and the Chairman of Labor has done an excellent job in getting these studies moving, and I think we're going to have a good product. Really why I brought it is last year there was a different department, totally different department, that sole-sourced something, and then I got a ton of emails from web designers throughout Wyoming. It was a web thing. That never got consulted. They never got to put in for the RFP. And I just don't want to get bit like that again. I think this could turn out bad. I don't think anybody's going to award this to their cousin or anything bad like that. It's not like that kind of deal. But I think it's not going to take that much extra time to make sure that we're getting good proposals and that everyone has a fair chance to submit a proposal. And I'd urge you to vote aye.
We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 33. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
All those in favor, please stand.
30.
The amendment is adopted. We are on second reading amendment number 2. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 34 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll recall our discussions on, I believe, second or third reading of the budget bill when it came to developmentally disabled and the waiver programs that we offer through the Department of Health. And I had mentioned to you at that time that we needed to take a look at some of the efficiencies we might be able to find within the program in an effort to find those efficiencies and reduce the waiting list based on the efficiencies found. That, in combination with additional funding, could go a long way towards reducing the waiting list. So what you have before you is added to the shall language on page 3 at the top, where it says the study shall be subject to the following, and then this just inserts a Romanet 4 there in front of the current Romanet 4 at the bottom of the page 3 after line 21, and it requires that the study examine our current developmental disability waiver program for increased efficiencies. And you can see there A through F, what I've looked at there is alternative ways to deliver our services. Take a look at means testing, perhaps. I gave you the example of with regard to DD waivers for children. We might want to take a look at folks that are, you know, making $100,000, $250,000, $1 million a year. We might want to look at their income and have some type of sliding scale so that they might contribute to the services we provide their children that have disabilities. Take a look and see what's essential in this government program. See what's nice to have, and then see what's essential to provide the best care, but also to hold down spending. D, E, and F, I just want to talk about that for just a second. Well, specifically E and F. The way it works now, under my understanding, is that we have these waiver programs that have anniversary dates every 5 years. So when you start one, we always have this question, what can we change in the program to find efficiencies before that 5-year period is up? And we're not really sure, quite honestly, if we can do that under the federal rule. So what I'd like this study to do is look at the identification of the efficiency improvements and see what we can do now versus what we might have to wait for another, say, 3 years or 4 years or even 2 years, whatever the balance of that anniversary date would be. And you can see on F, we might want to take a look at the possibility of having a dual program so that if the feds come back and say, no, you can't make changes to your current program because you've got a 3-year balance left till you hit your 5-year anniversary, we thought, well, maybe we can start up a new waiver program. If we identify efficiencies within that program, start that program for new enrollees, and then kind of meld that together when the other one expires. So we don't have to wait. If we find efficiencies, we don't have to wait 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever the balance might be, before we can start implementing the program, hopefully finding the efficiencies and reducing the waiting list. So that's the amendment, and I would stand for any questions.
Representative Croker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendment, for those of you who don't know, my son is on the DD waiver program, and so I can speak from experience that it's a very good program that does a lot of good for a lot of people, especially people who are in a situation where they can't take care of themselves through circumstances that are no fault of their own. But also, being familiar with the program, there are definitely ways that we could make improvements in the program where I think that we could help more people by eliminating some of the unnecessary services. So I think this is a fantastic idea, because I believe that if we make it more efficient and really target what's necessary rather than what's a luxury, we can help more people who need it the most and get that waiting list down and save some money for the state also. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. I think this is a really good amendment, but I will tell you that I have very serious concerns about being able to meet deadlines, adding this criteria and then tying up the ability for them to do piecemeal in a timely manner. I'll tell you, I'm just worried about the outcomes, because I don't want this to be done in a hurried fashion. I don't want it to be done halfway. What I want is a report at the end that you can trust, that you can look at and say, here are the outcomes, here's what you need. Are we adding too much? I like this list. I think this list is exactly what the Department of Health had in mind as they were looking at their cost drivers, because this is one of the cost drivers. So not to cry over spilled milk, but I think that we've tied the hands and being able to deliver this on and for this amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? Second time before the sponsor? Mr. Speaker. Question on the amendment. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 34, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The amendment is adopted. We are on second reading amendment number 3. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 34 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, this was kind of a cleanup, if you will, and also kind of a philosophical amendment for me. When we ask this study to look at certain programs, and at the bottom, if you start on the bottom of page 3, and you say, after the study has identified cost drivers and other areas within the Medicaid program which may benefit from redesign, and skip down to the bottom of that paragraph, it says, you know, possible options may include. And the first paragraph, A, talks about the establishment of innovative service delivery systems and models. After that, you'll see a list, and it says such as, so it's not exclusive, but it says such as healthy frontiers and accountable care organizations, including health homes, medical homes, primary care medical homes, and total health records. Now, in my mind, I don't want the study, I want them to look at these things, but I don't really want them to be focused solely on these things. And I think they will consider all of these things if we just have in there, we want to look at the establishment of innovative service delivery systems and models, period. And that's what this amendment does there, is it deletes the rest of that paragraph on lines 8 and then on 9 through 11. So that paragraph A, if you adopt the amendment, would just say establishment of innovative service delivery systems and models, and then semicolon, and then you'd go on to B. I struggled a little bit with this because, as I said, I want them to look at some of these other things, including health homes, medical homes, primary care medical homes. But I think my biggest problem was on line 8, where it said healthy frontiers. I don't want this study to go down a road where it's focused on just a certain number of items and then focuses on those to the exclusion of some of the others. And with regard to healthy frontiers, currently in the budget, the reversionary language that the Senate put on is basically failed in the conference committee. So I'm not even sure it would be accurate to say that they consider a program such as Healthy Frontiers, because as of right now, I don't think it'll be in existence anymore. So that's the other thing. So I look forward to a little bit of discussion on this, especially from the good chairman of the Labor Committee, with regard to this list and whether or not it sort of pigeonholes the study into examining only these areas when we're talking about innovative service delivery systems. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I think this is a friendly amendment, and I think there are a lot of other models out there that You know, this says such as, which means it's not limited to, and obviously Healthy Frontiers is dead. But I think keeping the possibilities open is a good idea, and I think this is a friendly amendment.
Anyone else for your first time, second time before the sponsor, ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 34, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 3 is adopted. Senate File 34 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42.
Senate File 42, introduced by the Select Natural Water Resource, Funding and Act Relating to Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource.
Senate File 42 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 49.
Senate File 49, introduced by Senator Emmerich, an act relating to the term for Youth Board of Agriculture.
And Senate File 49 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 52.
Senate File 52, introduced by Senator Rothfuss, an act relating to reading assessment and intervention regarding dyslexia screening and response.
Senate File 52 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57.
Senate File 57, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57 and would ask for your aye vote. This is some cleanup language that was brought to me by staff dealing with making the standing committee amendment out of the House conform properly, and I would ask for your aye vote.
Anyone else for their first time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 57 has been adopted. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move second reading amendment to second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 57 and ask for your favorable consideration. Friends, this is just a clarification to the guidance that's given to the State Board and the Department as they develop the writing assessment. We have a State Board that has many new members. We've got some new personnel at the State Department, and I think this provides more guidance on the writing assessment. During the summer meeting, we received testimony from both the State Department of Education and the consultants explaining that there are a wide variety of writing assessments around the country. Wyoming's writing assessment in the past has relied exclusively on prompts, which is a version of something called on-demand writing. This would require the board to consider a more multifaceted writing assessment that could take into account grammar, how many of us can still diagram a sentence, and also rather than just simply writing to a prompt, which, you know, can be a random topic, this would require writing in response to informational tasks, and I think it would give us a broader idea of how our students can do on writing. And again, it's guidance to the State Board as they develop the assessment. Thank you.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the amendment. My question is, and I haven't had a chance to talk with her much about this, so we're going to have some dialogue on the floor right now, which is fine. You'll all get the privilege of that, I guess. But as we move away from the prompt system that we're using now and those questions that we field tested previously, when would you envision that we would implement this change in direction for our writing assessment? And I guess it probably ties back to language in the bill, and I'm not tracking that right in front of me, but is this for the 2013-14 assessment year?
Representative Harshman, first time.
Just, part of the thing with the writing issue, and I guess it might be a question, but how is this, currently there are people who grade these. I think they're in Minneapolis, wherever they read the test four times, each writing test four times, each assign a different score. But I think the real issue is who picks out these anchor papers. And that's why you see these wild swings. And I'll just give a body example. One year, an English teacher said that if a student did not indent the paragraph, there's no way they could get a four, on a four-point rubric, 4-3-2-1. There's just no way. The next year, doesn't matter. You don't have to indent, and you can get a four. You don't even have to spell all the words right and get a four. And so and that affects then how papers are graded across the state when they go to these testing companies. But I know it's a little off kilter, but maybe it'll spring in, because I know you worked hard, Representative, on all these writing testing issues. So maybe you can comment on some of those things as well. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Representative Throne?
Mr. Speaker, in response to the good chairman's question, originally in Senate File 70, we anticipated that the writing assessment would be implemented, the new writing assessment would be implemented in 2012-2013. That is not going to be realistic, so this would be 2013-2014 as we move towards a new writing assessment. In response to the good coach from the middle of the state, this would allow a broader array of writing assessment. What we have now is two prompts, generally, and so it's like a uniform topic that everybody writes on in a particular grade, and then that's where they have to get into the anchor paper situation, and then in order to remove any sort of subjectivity, they have to have multiple graders, and that becomes quite expensive and, in my opinion, of limited value because it only measures one type of writing skill. The value of what we learned from the consultants over the summer and what we learned in research from other states, because Wyoming, I believe, was about the only state that was testing writing this way, is that you test a variety of writing skills in conjunction with critical thinking by having an assessment that responds to a specific text. And then also our current writing test barely looks at the whole grammar issue. And so I think a component of writing that focuses on a grammar assessment would also be valuable. And then you'd move away from the concern the coach had about the wide swings in scores and just looking at an anchor paper. You'd get rid of some of that variability in the testing. Thank you, and I'd urge your aye vote.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment 2 to Senate File 57 has been adopted. We're on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 57. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 57 and briefly explain it. If you go to page 5, you have to really start at the bottom of my amendment here to understand what the other was all about. If you go to page 5, line 1, it says, after examination, you insert reading and mathematics. So this is applicable to seniors that have been found to be not college ready in the 11th grade. And if they take the ACT test in the 12th grade, we're just saying they don't have to take the same science requirements, but we're just really trying to find out that they know the basics of reading and mathematics. And in order to do that, we had to back up and change on page 4 the language you see here on line number 4, where they say, mathematics and science for both grades, so you cross out both grades and put grade 11, and then so on for by deleting grade 11 at the end, you're now have consistency between what you see in the requirements on page 4 and the top line of page 5. So that's my explanation, and I'll try to answer questions.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 57 has been adopted. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 57 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, in your box there was a question the other day about just testing. What does this look like? And so there's a one pager in your tray, and we've had a good chairman of education, representative from Cheyenne, another from Casper, and a good representative from Johnson County, and I all served on this accountability committee, and really have worked very hard at this, and we've learned a lot. And I sent you an email here a few minutes ago. It's in your inbox there. That really, I see this as moving Wyoming from good to great. And if you look in your email, there's some information that I provided you on a couple things. First of all, are the NAEP scores, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and that's been around since the 60s. That's the longest national comparator test. And it's a sample test. Not every child in Wyoming or across country takes it, but they take representative samples. And it really shows what kids in states across the country know and can do on the core subjects, really math and reading. And there are some writing tests in there. And you can get on that website, and I just took it off our State Department's website, and you can see it. Wyoming is consistently scored above the rest of the country. And we were behind in writing, and you've seen we've overtaken the rest of the country on that. But still, I don't think, as you rank us, we can do better. And then the PAWS test, you can see the information. There's a link on that email I sent you to the PAWS test. And you can see from school year 05-06 to this past year, Wyoming students have improved at every grade level on every subject. Let me say that. Every Wyoming grade level and every subject has improved in the last 5 years. And you can see all the graphs that comes right from our department head. And of course, that's math, reading, and then writing, and now we've started science here in the last few years. And then finally, on that email I sent you, the ACT, we're one of only 8 states that do this college readiness test. I guess I can't say that name. It's a college readiness test, and we pay for it for all our kids. And there's only 8 states, and Wyoming ranks 3rd, and you can see those scores. We can get to the top of that, but we're certainly not 8th. We're 3 out of 8. And then finally, there's some salary information, and you can see longitudinal. You know, back in the last boom, we were 6th in the country, and you can see how that changed. We went down into the 40s, and now we're back up right at the national average, which is about 13, 14, 15. And we did some work in this committee with comparative wages. How does Wyoming stack up? And we stack up very well. And I think the good chairman of education talked about that the other day, as high as 2nd maybe in comparative wages. And you can talk about that with economists, how it works. But the bottom line is I think Wyoming schools are really doing well and appreciative. I know teachers and folks are very appreciative of the support that this house has given to education over the last decade. But really talking about good to great now, and if you've read that book, it talks about the whole DNA change. How do companies go from good to great, these large corporations? And really that's Wyoming schools, you know, 80,000 kids now, and how do we move there? I think a lot of it begins with what we say. And I tell you, as a father, my kids, I think, will become what I tell them they're going to become. If I tell them they're good, they're going to be great, you can do it. You're a hard worker.
You've got tenacity. You're getting better. They're going to do that. And I see the opposite of that in my job where kids aren't told that. I think as a coach, our football team will become what I say it's going to become. They're hard workers. They're tough. They'll finish strong in the fourth quarter. All those things. And so our words are really powerful. It talks in Scripture. I mean, the book of James talks about how powerful words are. I mean, it's like a rudder in a ship. One small rudder can turn a large ship. You know, the spark of your tongue can set a forest ablaze. So words are really important. And I think what we say as leaders on this floor is really important and what our expectations are. And so I think this accountability bill is huge because we're going to say, hey, we want Wyoming schools. You're doing a good job. We can see the improvement, but we're going to take the next step. We're going to learn from each other. Folks who are struggling, we're going to pick you up. We're going to get you moving because you're never going to sanction anybody into greatness. I mean, you're not going to beat anybody into greatness. And this bill doesn't do that. It provides a system of supports, and we're going to learn from each other. There's some schools that are best in the country in this state. But we're going to find out what those schools are doing and spread that good news to everybody. And so that's all in here. And so really appreciate your support for it. On the handout that was in your tray, you can see the state testing under the current Senate File 57, the PAWS test. Now, we had at one time the YCAS. This is a little different, although why it was changed, you know, that was a political decision back, you know, 8-10 years ago. But you can see currently grades three through eight reading and math. That's what we currently do. And then science in grades 4 and 8. Now, we test science in 11, but we're going to do that with a different test here, you'll see. And I think the House Committee and the Senate Committee, Education Committees, both worked this, and I think have this in a very good place. Grades 3, 5, and 7, writing. You just heard the representative from Cheyenne talk about we want to hone the writing test. But if you look online, our writing scores, we're getting better. Our kids are writing better. This college readiness, and then in parentheses, I put 11th grade achievement, because we're going to use that for achievement. See, we're going to test growth and achievement, and then kind of a status or readiness. And you can see we currently give this test in grade 8, and we're going to move it to grade 9 and then 10, and then grade 11 will be the one where we really test achievement with it. And that includes the writing. So the amount of time for testing actually goes down because the PAWS test is long. We're going to replace the 11th grade PAWS with this standardized achievement test that you all know that we're currently paying for. It's going to be a shorter test, and it's much less expensive. The PAWS test is, well, we're budgeting $18 million this biennium for 7 grades. I mean, it's tremendous. We spend more per capita. Nobody's even close to us. You know, a state with a similar population, still much bigger than us, Vermont's $10 million. You know, we just spend a ton of money. So we're going to cut down the money, and we're going to cut down the time, and I think we're going to get more information. And, you know, as you look at this grade 9 and 10, they fold in with this grade 11 test that you know what I'm talking about. I can't say it on the floor. But so a child in ninth grade will see how they score on this readiness test, and it will tell them and their parents and their teacher, hey, you're missing these two algebra concepts. To score a 24 on this 11th grade test, you're going to need to learn this. Or to score 28, you're going to need to learn this, this, and this. So it's got some great data, okay? And then the grade 12, as it came out of House Education, I think is in a good spot. It's going to be optional, depending really on what happened in the 11th grade test. So if you pass in your college and work ready with the 11th grade test, you won't have to take it in 12th grade. You can take another optional related test. But if you didn't pass it, you'll have to take it as a 12th grader. I think that's in a good spot. And then the district testing. We've been doing this for the last 5-6 years. It used to be our 48 districts used all kinds of adaptive or benchmark tests. And where we're at now is everybody's crossed that hurdle, and I can't say the testing company's name, but we're all using the same test. So your children in third grade will take this reading and math test. You'll find out where they're at on national norms. And then some teachers might do it in the middle of the year, and then at the end of the year, and you can see growth of your child, and you can see where they've moved, and it also helps form instruction. It helps the teacher inform instruction.
That's called the formative part. Well, we've been doing that for the last several years in Wyoming. And I think it's feeling of the select committee that we ought to keep doing that. We've crossed that hurdle of everybody using different tests. We're all using the same tests at the district level, and we'd like to keep doing that. Now, I've got a little amendment that makes sure we do. And then the summer school and our intervention programs. We've been, for the last 5 years, studying summer school with this benchmark adaptive test. How do they grow over time? Is summer school making a difference? Our after-school or tutor programs, our tutor programs uses. We want to find out if it's working, not just throw money at it. And so we're starting to get a pretty good base of data over the last 5 years. So that, I hope, gives you a little information on that. Okay, now on to the amendment, Mr. Speaker. I can just walk you through this. Really, what it does is it deletes the standing committee amendment and then puts a lot of things back in from the standing committee amendment and a few others. So really, the standing committee amendment that came out of House Education had two things going. It had writing with language. Well, the select committee said, no, we want writing and language. And here's the difference. I've heard this from legislators. I want a kid to be able to at least write a paragraph and spell the words right, put a period at the end, capitalize the next sentence, have some punctuation and spelling. Well, that's part in the Common Core. That's called language. And at first, we put it in. It wasn't even in. And so some of the current pause, only 25% of the pause is this language component where punctuation is important. Well, and some of this has been sold to us that, well, you've got spell checkers, you've got all that. I'm sorry. I think there's times for on-demand writing when we all have to write a note and we all have to spell and we all have to, have correct punctuation. So that's what that does. It corrects that. It's writing and language. The other part was about the waiver. And No Child Left Behind is 3rd through 8th grade and 11th grade. Well, the select committee put in this college readiness test, which we're already paying for, in place of the 11th grade pause. Saved us tons of money, and it's a test that parents and kids really buy into and they want. Okay? So we said in our select committee, in fact, the quote was, what's the federal government going to do? I mean, really. We are going to this. We're not going to worry about the waiver later. What's the federal government going to do to us? Well, there's all kinds of states have already used this 11th grade test. Is there No Child Left Behind requirement? So we know it's been done before, and we're confident about that. But the current language in here says, well, we're just going to let the superintendent of schools, whenever they want to apply for a waiver, but in the meantime, we'll use the 11th grade pause. I'm sorry. Our people don't want that. Our parents don't want it. Kids don't want it. Legislators don't want it. And this amendment does that. The other part is the goals. And if you will look on page, let me find that, Mr. Speaker. I've got it. I got to have so many tabs on this. There's goals in here, and if you have your bill out, and you turn to page, Mr. Chairman, you help me out here. Where are the goals at? Page 6? Okay, thank you. If you turn to page 6, I think it's section 2, is it not? Yeah, it's on page 6. Now, you can see on line 12 in your bill, it says, the goals of the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act are to become a national education leader, ensure all students leave Wyoming schools career and college ready, recognize student growth and increase the rate of growth for all students, flipping over to page 7, recognize student achievement and minimize the achievement gap, and improve teacher school district leader quality. The next one on line 9, maximize efficiency of Wyoming education, and line 11, increase the credibility and support of Wyoming public schools. Well, this amendment restores that language back into the statute. Standing committee amendment put it in a section 5, so you'll never see it after we vote this in. And I think it's important to have clear goals. What do we want? Because our schools are going to be what we say they're going to be. I really believe that. So, okay, so taking you through the amendment, Mr. Speaker, You can see that it deletes the standing committee amendment. There's some cleanup language on line 5 and 7 of the amendment. And also, really, these are all cleanups through page 11, and these were some of the things that were included in the standing committee amendment. Now, line 13, I think, brings back the standing committee amendment. Talks about an optional 12th grade test if you are college ready and taking the test again if you did not pass it in 11th grade. That's page 13, so that's the same. There's a change now on line 16 of the amendment, and this is really not so much a change, but this needs to be done one way or the other. It's about the developmental disabled students who take this college readiness test in 11th grade. We have to have some waivers granted, and so that needs to go in. New language on line 34 on page 1, and this is the readiness part. And that's those things are defined. We have high school graduation rates. We have scores on this 11th grade test. And I wanted to put one more in here, and I wanted to explain it to you. It says, as defined by 9th grade credit accumulation. There's a couple benchmarks in education. We know that 3rd grade reading is huge. 8th grade math is huge. 3rd grade, you learn to read, and then after that, you have to read to learn. You have to read to learn history or read to learn math. And so that's huge. But we also know in terms of high school graduation that 9th grade credits, students who complete all their credits in 9th grade, it's almost 100% graduation rate. And you can imagine that 14-year-old fails freshman English, and then they have to take freshman and sophomore English as a sophomore, and pretty soon they're 15 years old, and they're taking two English classes, and pretty soon that hill starts looking pretty high. And so what this does is tells us and our schools, hey, this is important. We're going to measure this. I teach at a high school. We had an 85% completion rate of our freshman credits. It's been a major focus. Now we're at 97% this year. And it's just setting up a series of interventions where kids just cannot fall through the cracks in 9th grade. It's huge. And we all have raised teenagers. We know what 14-year-olds are like. And it's just a huge thing, I think. So I'd appreciate your support. If somebody doesn't like that, I suppose you could divide it out. Okay, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the body's patience with me. Okay, the next one really is conforming languages on line 37 through 41. These were in the standing committee's amendment, so that goes back in. It's about these conforming with the principle, that word constitute for require, and then in a manner to maintain student confidentiality. I think that was all in the previous amendment. And then, Mr. Speaker, if I can have this right, I want to show you a new part that it's on line 2 on page 2. And if you didn't like this, you could divide it out. But this came from really the leader of the Senate in this committee, and he talked about in our last meeting about we have a lot of kids move from Wyoming school to Wyoming school. So if a kid from Casper moves to Cheyenne or a kid from Sheridan moves to Douglas, how do we know? I mean, what's their record? Some of this is stored on the WISER ID, but we wanted to make sure that each student then had an assessment profile because it'll help guide their instruction. Instead of coming in as a brand new third grader in a class and you don't know where Johnny's at, and this will help you guide some instruction for them. So that's a new piece of this amendment. Okay, and then the next part on line 7, this is really the key part I talked about on district testing. And the key word is to delete interim and then add the word adaptive. And what that does, it refers to a computer adaptive test. So a child's taking a math test in third grade, and he can answer 2 plus 2 equals 4. And then now it'll give him a little harder question. And he can answer that, and then it'll be a little harder question. And so it'll adapt as it goes on. We want to make sure that our districts continue to use this. They've all bought into it. And we're starting to get some good data from that as well. And I think schools are comfortable with that. And there's another piece where that put in there as well. This on line 12, this is new. Basically, we currently, the expensive part of the pause, we test your math skills by how well you write. We test your reading skills by how well you write. Now, The college readiness test doesn't do that. It's multiple choice. And so you have to write telling how what you just read, and so we gauge that. So I proposed, and this has been talk, I proposed to take that part out and just leave these extended, constructed, written responses for the writing and language assessments only, and do like all the national tests and everybody else does and go back to a multiple choice. This was something kind of novel that we do, and it's very expensive. Okay, there on line 16 on page 2, you can see the adaptive piece. Line 19 was in the Standing Committee Amendment, as well as line 22, just bringing those back in. Line 24, this is really an important piece with this adaptive test on this longitudinal study of summer school and our after-school programs. And we're starting to get some good data. We need a few more years, and we'll be in good shape. Okay, line 28 is this adaptive piece. I believe all these things are referred to the writing test, and this takes it back to where we had it in Senate File 70 last year in the Select Committee, that the writing does not have to be on the same day as the rest of the PAWS test. That's all that is, and we agreed to that last year. Okay, changes some of the writing tests. This will conform with the previous amendment. And I think that's it. So everything from line 31 down is about the writing test on a different day, and it conforms. So I know it's long and complicated, but it's really not. It's more about the writing and language, the adaptive piece, getting the goals back in, and then finally saying we're going to use this 11th grade test and not wait for some waiver that may or may not be applied for. So I'd stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Your first time, Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the good coach for bringing this amendment. I believe that on line 16 on the first page, I believe that that language about the waivers is really an important thing as far as this amendment is concerned. I'm anxious to hear what the good chairman has to say about all this. I did want to say, he kind of stole some of my thunder on third reading amendment. I was going to come and talk to the body about how well Wyoming students are performing, because that's an important thing that we need to know, that we've put a lot of money in it, and we've tried to do a lot of things, and we've made a lot of changes. But we are seeing results. There was some fourth grade, I was given an article where if we were to be another nation, Wyoming, and take our fourth grade testing results, we'd have wound up ranked fourth in the world with our tests for our fourth graders. So this is an important thing, and I'd like to see us continue down this way. I think this is a very important bill, and I think the committee did excellent work on it.
Chairman Teeters, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the issue with the codification of the goals on page 6, that's really our preference. I think the committee chose to remove that in the standing committee because we generally don't codify goals. We codify things that implement statute, and this is making a statement. We generally don't make statements in our law. That's really up to the committee of the whole. Either way, it doesn't, or the body, it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference to me. And the way this is crafted, it's impossible to split that out because he deleted the entire standing committee amendment when he proceeded. The issue with the waivers on page 5, line 9, just as long as we all understand that we are tying the hands of the department by forcing this issue, if we are unsuccessful in getting a waiver, we will not be in compliance with No Child Left Behind, which is really neither here nor there. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where they won't allow us to go ahead and waive that. If they do, it will require legislative action on our part in the form of a fix for next year, but everybody needs to know that there isn't the possibility that we'll be out of compliance between now and when we're in session next year. All important policy points that the good bringer of the amendment brings. A lot of these ideas have been in and out of legislation I don't have a whole lot of heartburn, quite frankly, with a lot of it. He left the majority of what I was concerned about intact, and that is the test burden that we were placing on our kindergartners through third graders with the adaptive test. I had real concern about that. That's been left in. He maintained the elimination of the interim benchmark, which moves the benchmark to only two tests a year. I'm comfortable leaving that the way we did it in the standing committee. We still have a third reading, so I'll study this further, and if there are major concerns, I will bring a third reading amendment to correct my concerns. But at this point, I would urge your adoption of the amendment.
Chairman Korberg, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Mine is merely just a question back to either the good chairman of education or the sponsor of the amendment, but I'd like to know what your concern is about the language, the adaptive. I'm interested in an explanation on that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Second time, Chairman Teeters.
Thank you. The language from the concern that was brought to the committee about the adaptive interim benchmark is that currently in the state of Wyoming, we are all using the same product. And there was concern about whether or not we continue to force everyone to use that same product or if at some point in time we might want to go to another product. I think it's important that we use the same product statewide. But if this institution decides that we're going to use another test in the future, it will require statutory change. Based on the way that the language was stripped out of the standing committee amendment and the way he's describing it in this amendment, it narrows it so that we will statutorily use the single product that we're using now. And so if the body has heartburn with that, we need to strip that out. I think I'm comfortable narrowing it to a single instrument in statute with the understanding that if something better comes along, it will require a statutory change. But we need every district in the state to implement the same benchmark adaptive so that we can use that data in the accountability system. If we have multiple assessments, it'll be very difficult, if not impossible, for us to use it as a comparator between districts. So those are the differences in the balance. I think I would feel most comfortable about changing the benchmark adaptive in statute anyway if we chose to go to a different instrument in the future. So I guess I don't have a whole lot of heartburn with the direction this amendment takes us in relation to the benchmark adaptive assessment.
Anyone else for their second time? No, no, it's up to you. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just the goals, as the good chairman said, and we can change that on third reading if you have heartburn with that. The waiver issue really on line 16, page 1 of the amendment, is really for a DD, a developmental disability waiver, and it's so that part's important. And again, as the good chairman said, by saying adaptive, we kind of spell out a test that we're currently using. And it's really, I think, important, and I think a lot of the committee and folks thought it's important not to jump ship right now. We finally got everybody on board, and they're all agreed through a collaborative process. We've been using it for 3, 4, 5 years. And the concern is that now you turn it loose, and now we can't even talk as districts anymore. And so that's really that part. So thank you for your patience, and appreciate your eye vote.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 57 has been adopted. Senate File 57 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 58.
Senate File 58, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Administration of Government Health Insurance Exchange Study.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 58. As I shared my concerns with the body on Friday, I just think this Affordable Care Act is one that we need to challenge. If we choose not to implement a health exchange for our state, healthcare exchange system. The federal law cannot function, so I think that is our best course of action. I really liked Section 2, though, that said that we could not form any health benefit exchange until after we had met next year. So what I did with this amendment was I kept the committee intact. I just moved everything up forward a year. So saying the committee is not going to meet for a year, let's let the Supreme Court case play out, let's let the elections play out, see what the new administration has in store, and then if we need to revisit it, the committee is there and we can have a meet there, and then it took out the appropriation. So it's basically saying let's just not take any action until we meet next time, and if the federal government wants to force the exchange upon us, the law can't function because there's no mechanism to fund a federal exchange, only a state exchange. So if we implement a state exchange, we are implementing the ACA for the federal government. So I really think we need to resist that. I'll stand for any questions.
Anyone for their first time? First time? Representative Kasparek.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's important that the steering committee can keep meeting this year. You know, we've gained a lot of information. We've been able to attend listening sessions. So we're hearing firsthand from what is going on at federal HHS to really see what direction they're going in. It's not a commitment. We're not establishing exchange. We're keeping at the table so that we can keep the conversation going and we can know firsthand what is happening around this issue. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know where to start. I guess I'll start with our senior senator's advice to study everything and commit to nothing. And I think that if we put our heads in the sand and say, well, I don't like this and I don't want to be involved, I think, well, okay, if that's really the reaction that you want to have, go ahead and do it. But the truth of it is that HHS is going around the law. They've already awarded a contract with a Canadian company for a huge amount of money to set up exchanges for those that do not wish to. Now, I can't answer for them as to whether what they're doing is legal or not. All I can answer to is if we don't study it, then we are just simply at their mercy. We just simply are saying, okay, federal government, go ahead. You just implement an exchange in Wyoming's behalf. If we continue to study it, if you go back to the bill and look, it gives us a lot of different options of study. It says, let's talk about compacts. Let's talk about increasing insurance risk pools. It's talking about selling across state lines. It's talking about investigating a lot of different areas. But if you want to just kill the bill and pretend like it's all going to go away, you know, I guess that's up to the body. But I'd rather go in with being fully informed, knowing what the impact is for every kind of exchange there is. If we fail this bill, if we put everything off for a year, then it stops us from studying the things that need to be studied for us to make an informed decision. And I think that that's probably the best way I can say it. It needs to be an informed decision. What is the impact on our state? Do we want an exchange? Nothing in this bill commits us to an exchange. Quite the contrary. It says, if we find out that an exchange isn't what we want to do, then don't. But I want to know, because we still have 83,000 people out there that are uninsured. And whether we like it or not, we still have 36,000 that are coming onto the Medicaid rolls. Do you want to explore? And not just through the Medicaid cost study, but is there an insurance product out there? Is there some way that we can figure this out? And putting it off a year isn't going to get us any closer to a solution. But by going down three pathways, three different exchanges, a completely independent, one that picks the things that are appropriate out of ACA, and one that's fully compliant, we can compare them. We can see what they look like. We can say, we don't like it. At the end of the day, we can say we don't like it. Or we can continue on. And I vote to continue on. I vote that knowledge is power, and the more information that we gather, we will be more powerful in making a decision of what it is that is good for the citizens of Wyoming. I ask you to vote no on this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I'll submit that we know that the ACA is a bad bill. It's horrible for our country. The will of the people in Wyoming is clearly against it. The best way for the states to fight it is not to implement an exchange, and anything we can do to not implement an exchange is fighting the bill, so I would encourage your aye vote.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 58, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 58 has failed. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 2. What this would do, if you look over on page 6 of the bill, we already have a list of things that the state will not do, in particular that we won't implement an exchange until after the study is completed. But more importantly, what this says is no state agency or person representing the state of Wyoming shall apply for a level 1 or a level 2 establishment grant from the federal government until the United States Supreme Court rules in the case of Florida versus United States Department of Health and Human Services. What this says is they have to get some money to do these studies, and those studies are going to come from federal tax dollars. And so the feds are handing out what's called level 1 grants and level 2 grants. What this says is nobody from the state would apply for those until after the Supreme Court rules. Let's slow this down a little bit. Let's wait until the court rules and says which way we're going with the Affordable Care Act. There's no need to be hurrying this quickly with this issue. And this would just simply say no one's going to apply for any of those grants from the federal government until after the court rules. And I'd urge you to vote aye.
Chairman Harvey, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge you to resist this. You know, the deadlines are the 30th of March and the 1st of June, and we're not going to have a court ruling by then. Maybe we will, but what if we don't? Now, there are some things that are still in the bill that we can study, but I can tell you I worked again on the level 1 grant application this morning, and we're taking out every word that refers to must or shall or anything that says that obligates us in any way. But if you want us to study it, and if you want us to stay up with the Health and Human Services, we could take it out of general file money if you wanted to, or we could accept this grant and do the work. The things that are totally outside of ACA, the appropriation is in this bill. But this level 1 grant still does not obligate us to start an exchange. It only gives us the resources to be able to do it. And if at the end, if the court case says that it was all overturned and that it doesn't exist, great. We'll only be $10,000 into the money, and we'll turn the rest back. I just because we receive it doesn't mean we have to keep it. I mean, certainly watching the court case is one of the things on our radar screen. It's one of the things that I think we need to do. And I just would urge you to resist this. if we wait for that court case decision to come down, we will miss deadlines, and then we will not have the ability to make these studies happen.
Representative Kasparek, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was one said about procrastination. The best thing about procrastination is the sound of the whoosh as it passes you by. You know, if we miss these deadlines, it's okay. You know, we effectively stop any forward movement. But if we make these deadlines, we can continue to study, be prepared if the lawsuit doesn't go in the way we all hope that it will. Now, we don't want to go forward with this, but we want to know as much as we can know based on what is coming down from the feds on health care reform. So I would urge you to resist this amendment and allow the committee to continue looking at options that make sense for Wyoming.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you. I just had a few questions maybe so I can decide where I want to go with this. We talk about this level one and level two funding. And my first question is, because I'm confused, we say that if we take the money, we're not obligated to do anything. And my question is, resubmitted, we're not obligated to pursue or hit certain benchmarks for the establishment of an exchange if we take the federal money? That's the first question. And then, I guess the reason I'm confused is because when we take federal money, I've never seen a time when we take federal money where we really have no obligation. It's not really even a contract of sorts. It seems like every time we take federal money, there's an expectation by the federal government that we meet X, Y, and Z. And what that leads me to is this conversation about these deadlines. I keep hearing in the deadlines that you saw, I think, in the last amendment that failed. Why do we have deadlines if we're not subject to them by the federal government? I would submit to you, and I would ask for information back. If we take this money, they're telling us that we're subject to those deadlines, and yet we're not committed because we take the funding. It's a cyclical argument, one I'm not sure I have the answer to. And so I'm really confused when I hear that we're not really obligated to do anything if we take the level one funding. So if somebody would clarify that for me, I would feel like I have more information with regard how to vote on this amendment.
Chairman Korberg, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I, too, have a couple of questions. I'd like to know, number one, how much we're asking for in the Level 1 grant. And the second question is, if we accept the money and we don't follow through with the exchange, I know in a lot of federal and state grants, then you have to pay the money back if you don't follow through. So I'd like to know if we do accept the money and then we don't implement an exchange, are we going to have to pay the federal government back for the money we spent? And then my third question is it directly tied to this piece of legislation? In other words, if this piece of legislation fails, will we still move forward with the grant and do the study? Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip.
Anyone else for your first time? Second time, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. Really good questions, and let me go back and answer some of those. The deadlines for the Level 1 grant application are just if you want the money to study it. That's just simply it. They're offering two more rounds of grants to be able to study. There are benchmarks that we are asked to study, but we are not obligated to to enact. So we do have to study automatic enrollment in Medicaid when you go on the insurance exchange. We do have to study, can we do that and what does it look like? But it doesn't mean we have to implement it. It means we have to know how to do it and what steps it would take and what it would cost the state of Wyoming to be able to do it. So it's based on really technology and how that works. The dollars asked for, I'm going to have to get back to you on that exactly because I don't have that right in front of me, but there is no payback requirement. This money, and really, the original deadlines for these study grants, the last one was supposed to be last December. But what they're finding is that states are not ready to do this. States don't have enough information. They can't get through to the technology pieces because they don't have enough information. So two new rounds of grants were established because they do want us to be informed. And the last question was, is the grant process, let me see if I understand this correctly, is the grant process tied to this legislation? Was that the basis of the question? It is not. It is. I'm sorry. We cannot apply for the grant if this legislation passes. This legislation is the only piece that offers us protection from enactment. It says that only the legislature can enact an exchange. So do we need a grant to be able to study? Yes, we do. Well, there's not enough money in this bill to accomplish because what we're asking for is two additional, a total of three. We've already finished one. We need two additional actuarial studies, and they don't come cheap. So we do need more information. The bill actually offers us more options and more protections than just simply applying for the grant alone. But without the grant, we are unable to complete all the studies. So they are interrelated to that extent. They're interrelated in that the bill stops us from being obligated until the legislature says yes. The bill won't allow this to happen through executive order or through the Department of Insurance. Some states are doing it that way. This bill says no. We're the decision makers, and we're going to do it. It gives us the opportunity to intermingle with other states. Whether we go to other states or whether we host a insurance symposium here and invite like-minded states to come and say, how can we increase insurance pools? How can we sell insurance across state lines? Can we enter into compacts? What does that take? The bill is different. The grant money does not allow us to do that. So the bill does, and the bill pays for that. The grant money talks more about the technology and more about the details of what kind of insurance exchange Wyoming would be interested in if we are interested in one. But there is no payback provision at all, and there is no, the obligation for benchmarks is the obligation to study each one of these items. It is not to enact or implement anything.
For your second time, Mr. Speaker.
I appreciate the information that was given in response to my questions, and I think the way I feel about this is, if we're looking at these grants to look at technology and things on ways to implement an exchange, I think we have the cart ahead of the proverbial horse, and I think I'd support the amendment I just heard the bill as it is allows us now to reach out to other states. The bill has funding for us to reach out to other states. It allows us to perhaps have some type of conference or something to discuss these issues with other rural states. And I guess I would feel like I'm not comfortable with taking the federal money at this point. Why are we talking about technology and all these ways to implement this before we've had the discussion with the other states as to whether or not this is even going to work for us? The bill as it stands now allows us to have those discussions. But adoption of the amendment would say, no, we're not going to use that federal money yet because perhaps we're not real comfortable with what it's going to obligate us to.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. Just to point out a few things, in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act in Section 1321, it makes it clear that the Department of Health and Human Services must approve every detail of the state exchange, and states can't deviate from the federal rules and standards. So this idea that if we don't hurry and do our state one, that the feds are going to come in and implement theirs, I don't find that to be a really solid argument, because so much of what our state exchange would be will have to be what the federal government tells us it has to be. It's vague regulations. There's proposed federal rules are silent on how the exchanges will even be approved. In the document, there's 347 pages of just rules on exchanges. They contain the word require 811 times. There's not a lot of leeway to the states. There's not a lot of flexibility to the states. The combined effect of these regulations and grant requirements are that a state would have to agree to surrender any last vestiges of meaningful control over how the ACA is implemented. Thus, a state would now have no more real control over an exchange it's set up than one that is set up by the federal government. These state exchanges can be costly. The grants run out in 2014. They don't provide monies for you to continue to operate them. It's IT intensive. Other states have started looking at how they're going to pay for it. Oregon's going to 3% premium tax. California's going to put on a tax. West Virginia's going to have a user fee. Utah has a broker technology user fee. Massachusetts has a 3-4% surcharge on exchange premiums. This isn't going to save money. This is going to cost money. These exchanges, you know, the one thing that we keep hearing is even if the federal government does not move ahead with ACA, let's say the Supreme Court rules that the ACA is unconstitutional, that we may still want to look at exchanges. They may actually be a good idea. But then we look at Utah. Let's look at Utah, because that's the example that we keep being given. It began in August 2009 with 36 businesses. By December, only 13 remained. In 2010, under strict underwriting rules were imposed, it only covers 5,500 people. 75% of them previously had coverage. Utah is not the great example that I think people seem to think it is. And lastly, the issue of being the early adopter, hurrying and being first, there's some high cost to doing that. Number one, the high cost, early mistakes, buggy technology, those are all things that there's no reason to wait. Just wait and let's see what the Supreme Court does. And let's send a strong statement. If we're so opposed to the Affordable Care Act, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to study it. I don't want to look at it. I want it dead. I want the Supreme Court to kill it, and I don't want us to have anything to do with it. And I think this sends a strong message that if we say we're not going to look at this until after the Supreme Court rules, let's wait for the judiciary to rule on whether or not this is constitutional. If they rule it's constitutional, then we can start looking at it. But I don't think we're going to fall that far behind, and I would urge us not to be taking money from the federal government to study this issue any further. I'd urge you to vote aye. We are voting on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 58. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Senate File 58 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. And I would like to take a personal privilege of the floor real quickly and welcome the Lingle, I believe, your 12th grade civics class with Mr. Darby and my old English teacher, Mrs. Harshberger. Welcome to the house.
Your former English teacher.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I should have said former English teacher. I apologize.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 78.
Senate File 78, introduced by Senator Johnson, enacting an act relating to interstate compact on students of military families.
Senate File 78, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 82.
Senate File 82, introduced by Senator Burns, an act relating to banks and banking regarding ATM fees.
Senate File 82, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 83.
Senate File 83, introduced by Senator Coe, an act relating to regulation and taxation of tobacco regarding cigarette manufacturing.
And Senate File 83, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 97.
Senate File 97, introduced by Senator Von Flattern, an act relating to the Wyoming Retirement Act.
Senate File 97, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 99.
Senate File 99, introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to children regarding guardian ad litem program.
Senate File 99, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to deviate a little bit and do some reading and signing of some more enrolled acts. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
Enrolled Act 17 being original Senate File 4, an act relating to registered agents being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Enrolled Act number 17 being original Senate File number 4, I am about to sign. That's assigned.
Senate Enrolled Act number 18, being original Senate File 6, an act relating to county memorial hospitals, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 18, being original Senate File 6. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 19, being original Senate File 32, an act relating to workers' compensation, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act number 19, being original Senate File 32. I have so signed.
Senate Enrolled Act number 20, being original Senate File 33, an act relating to administration of government, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act 20, being original Senate File 33. I have so signed. We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move a consent list consisting of the following bills: Senate File 12, 14, 19, 29, 41, 46, 55, and 85.
Does anyone wish to remove a bill from the consent list? The reading clerk will read the bills.
Senate File 12, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to nuclear energy, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 14, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to nuclear and hybrid energy system related projects, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 19, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to predator control, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 29, introduced by Senator Esquivel, an act relating to the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act regarding spice, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate file number 41 being introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish regarding wolf management, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate file 46, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to liens, fuel consumed in a project, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate file 55, introduced by Senator Bebot, an act relating to state trust lands, purchase of federal lands, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate file 85, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to administrative procedure regarding general permits, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Fawner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles excused. Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey. Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller excused, Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Ronish,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 58 aye, 2 excused. As to Senate File 12, are there any changes? Blake, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Stewart, aye to no. Croker, aye to no. Swanitzer Dave, aye to no. Connolly, aye to no. Byrd, aye to no. Roscoe, aye to no. Throne, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Gingery, aye to no. Freeman, aye to no. Barbuto, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 45 aye, 13 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 14, are there any changes? Croker, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Are there further changes? The vote is closed, 56 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 19, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 58 aye, 2 excused. As to Senate File 29, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 58 aye, 2 excused. Croker on that last one? Aye to no. Aye, 1 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 41, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Korberg, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 57 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 46, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 58 aye, 2 excused. As to Senate File 55, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 56 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 85, Are there any changes? Blake, aye to no. Barbuto, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Kennedy, aye to no. Simlick, aye to no. Connolly, aye to no. Roscoe, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Gingery, aye to no. Teeters, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Petroff, aye to no. Berger, aye to no. McComey, aye to no. Reeder, aye to no. McKim, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Freeman, aye to no. Blickrey, aye to no. Patton, aye to no. Botten, aye to no. Lubnow, aye to no. Stewart, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dave, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Edmonds, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dan, aye to no. Harvey, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Brown, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 26 aye, 32 no, 2 excused.
I need to correct one of these. So we're going to have to correct.
Just
wait.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate files 12, 14, 19, 29, 41, 46, and 55 have passed the House. Having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate file 85 has failed to pass the House. We're at that order of business, third reading regular list. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 27.
Senate File 27, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to public meetings being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, without objection, could we move Senate File 27 down to the bottom of the third reading regular list because there's a corrected copy of an amendment being distributed right now?
Bill, you want to just read the next one? We'll move on then to Senate File 67 or 36.
Senate File 36, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources regarding the acquisition of the LX Bar Ranch, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 36 and ask for your favorable consideration. I'll explain what this is all about. As you know, on second reading amendment, there was an amendment offered that reached in and took $160,000 out of a trust and replaced it, money that was coming from the general fund for this purchase. And I said at the time that I'd check into this and find out more about where it came and then bring it back to the body. And where this money came from. The Cultural Trust Board had set aside $164,000 to help, so they would have some money to carry forward because of the fluctuations that were going on in the market, and they only operate on the money that is earned from the trust fund, from the cut interest earned and money's earned by the trust fund. So that's where that money came from. It was sitting there as what they did. And the proposed amendment would establish a new precedent, I'm afraid, that the that would have impact the application processes and the of all of our trusts. This could happen not at, the only trust it couldn't happen to is the Hathaway Scholarship Fund, because we had a constitutional amendment that made it inviolate. So we've embarked on a new way to raise money from, and that's reaching into some of these trusts and taking the money that they've earned, that we have commissions and boards established to take applications and do these types of things with. So, Bonnie, this is a policy decision. I'm not going to go on beyond that, but that's what we need to be looking at here at this time of what we've done.
For your first time, Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, that's loud. I would urge your no vote on the amendment. You know, the court sets precedent. We set policy, would be my first argument. We created this pot of money. They have more than enough resources appropriated in the budget out of this account to function for the next 2 years, and this money is the leftover. And so I think it's a perfectly appropriate use of those resources and those dollars. I think if they don't have enough, these resources are generally appropriated through the grant process, and I do understand that this, us pulling it out in the form of a bill, is unusual. However, it has been done through the budget process. This money has, they have spent money out of this through the budget process. This idea could have very easily been a Section 300 in the budget, and so I guess I don't see it as a huge stretch. I think it's a reasonable approach. I think this is the sort of project that this money should be spent on, and I think for us as an institution to decide to spend it that way is just as appropriate as if they were to have brought the grant and funded this project separately through their own process. I view it as one and the same, and I would urge a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Connolly, first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment. Friends, what this amendment does is allow the Wyoming Cultural Resources Trust Fund to continue to operate in the way that it has. Right now, it has a board. It looks at applications from nonprofits all over the state. The maximum grant that it allows is about $50,000. We're going in and saying that $160,000 should be spent for one purpose and one purpose only. The $50,000 grants that it currently gives out are typically leveraged between 4 and 7 times by local community organizations. So, again, as the good chairman mentioned, this is a major policy decision to tell an acting board with a fund how to go about and spend its money, and something that I think that we should resist. It was never the intent of passing the funding for the Alex Bar for it to be funded in this kind of way. So again, on and in favor of the amendment.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment. I think it's also important to remember what we're doing in the context of what we've done in the budget with the Cultural Trust Fund this biennium. And remember, we put $10 million into the Wildlife Trust Fund. We put a number of dollars into other trust funds. But with the Cultural Trust Fund, we didn't put a single additional dollar into the corpus this year. So all they have to live on, all they have to do to utilize for their grant programs is the interest off the current trust account. And so with the amendment as it was passed in second reading, what we've done is we dipped in, stripped out that one access that they have to fulfill their mission and the programs that we've given them, and we're doing so without adding anything to the corpus in this biennium. So it is not just a small stretch, it is a big stretch. It is a decision to go in and decide that we as a legislative body will start spending trust fund dollars in a way that we see fit rather than relying on the process that we set up through statute. So I'd urge your aye vote on this amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? Chairman Brown, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, come up, please.
Mr. Speaker, just a review. We established the Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund. The corpus is inviolate. It earns interest. That interest is to be administered by a Cultural Trust Fund board made up of the five people, the administrator of the Division of Cultural Resources, or his designee, and four persons appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate from the following nominees: two persons nominated by the Wyoming Commission on Parks and Cultural Resources, and two persons nominated by the Wyoming Arts Council Board. That board is tasked with administration of the earnings from this fund, and 922307 says, subject to approval of applications from nonprofit and government organizations, the board may award grants to promote, preserve, and enhance the unique cultural heritage of Wyoming and its people. Well, on and for the amendment, simply because we have a board that's created, we've elevated it to the point where we have four gubernatorial appointments to this board. We have invested that board with authority to administer this fund, and to now sort of diss the whole thing and go around it and say, well, the legislature's going to just take control of this and kind of cast the board aside, I think is completely inconsistent with the philosophy that was at play when we set this up in the first place. And it has implications for lots of other trust funds. I don't think it's the way we ought to be conducting ourselves. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? First time. Second time? Second time? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 36 has been adopted. And Senate File 36 having been read, stand by. Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 36 and ask for your aye vote. This amendment contains two somewhat different distinct provisions. The last part of the amendment talks about the state shall have legal access to the lands, including the right of ingress and egress. I just wasn't sure, in visiting with some people up in that area, whether or not there was legal access to this property. My understanding, there's not. And I just didn't want to see the state get in a situation where we would be the donee of that property and then have to condemn somebody to get legal access, one of the neighbors up there. So that issue wasn't clear with me, so I thought this amendment would perhaps clarify that. The other issue that's addressed in the third reading amendment has to do with limiting any deed restrictions. We've had some experience in the past of the state receiving property, and there'll be, you know, restrictions that can only be used for a certain purpose. And in one of the cases up in my area, it really limits the ability of a private foundation to try to cash flow that operation up there, if they could use it for some other activities, it would still be appropriate to the facility. So I didn't want to see where we would have some language in there in a deed that said you can't use it. I mean, it's going to the state parks and cultural sites. I think that's well defined what it would be used for, and they would protect the cultural value of it. But if there's some other things that could be done, then I didn't want any language in there that would restrict that. So that's the purpose of this third reading amendment number 2. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, my question, which I truly do not know the answer, is do we have legal access to the property? Not physical access. Do we have legal access? In other words, if there's a river there, do we have the property right to go build a bridge on the river or not?
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Second time prior to the sponsor, Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is my impression from the conversation that I had with an individual who seems to know that property is that there is no legal access to it. You can float the big powder and get up to it, or you can fly into it. But it's going to require that there's a bridge built over the river, I think, to access it. I don't know that for a fact, but I don't want to use this amendment to try to discourage people from voting favorably on this proposal. I just think we need to lay into some conditions here that we don't lock ourselves in a box where we have to go to condemnation or some other means to get access to it. So, it might involve just the donation coming from the individual in terms of getting legal access, and it might involve adjacent property owners. I just don't know. So, because I didn't know, I thought this would help clarify and say if we're going to accept this property, we need to do it on this basis.
All those in favor of third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 36 has been adopted. And Senate File 36, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown. Brechtel, would you confirm your vote, please?
No.
Brown?
Aye.
Burkhart?
Aye.
Byrd?
Aye.
Campbell?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Childers?
Aye.
Connolly?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Davison?
No.
Edmonds?
No.
Eklund?
No.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Gay?
No.
Gingery?
No.
Goggles excused. Greer?
Aye.
Green?
Aye.
Harshman?
Aye.
Harvey? Hunt.
Aye.
Dillaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Lebno.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petrov.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Reeder.
Aye.
Roscoe. Simlick.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Cheaters.
No.
Throne. Throne. Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Simlick, aye to no. Burkhart, aye to no. Hunt, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 38 aye, 20 no, 2 excused.
Senate File 36, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 36 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 67.
Senate File 67, introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to real estate brokers and sales agents, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
And Senate File 67, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers. Connolly, Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
no.
Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles excused, Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
no.
Dillaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lebno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
aye.
Miller excused, Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petrov,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Reeder,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Cheaters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? Childers? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 37 aye, 21 no, 2 excused.
And Senate File 67, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the House, Senate File 67 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27.
Senate File 27, introduced by the Judiciary Committee on the Act relating to public meetings, be an act by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 27 and ask for your favorable consideration. Brothers and sisters of the 61st, this amendment doesn't change the law in any way, shape, or form. It just makes it easier to understand. We have in our statutes a provision that says to consider or receive any information classified as confidential by law. There are two statutes that are referenced there. 352910 says is quality management functions in a hospital. And 352910A says quality management information relating to the evaluation or improvement of quality health care services is confidential. So we have a statute that says it's classified as confidential by law, and then it goes on to say that you can't testify about anything there. That's for health care institutions. Wyoming Statute 112-101 is the Privileged Communications Act, and it says the following person shall not testify in certain respects. It says an attorney or physician concerning a communication made to him by his client or patient in that relation or this advice to a client or patient. The attorney or physician may testify by express consent of the client, the patient, and if the client or patient voluntarily testifies, the attorney or physician may be compelled to testify on the same subject. Then it talks about clergymen and husbands and wives, which really doesn't apply to a government agency, but that's our Privileged Communication Act. What I'm trying to do here is just reference the two places where in the statute we make that information confidential so that when somebody pulls out their little brochure that says this is what the Public Meeting Act covers, you can say, well, right here it says that. And so we're not changing anything substantively. We're just adding some statutory references to make easier understanding and, of our statutes. And so I would urge you to vote for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 27, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 27 has been adopted. Senate File 27 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Arbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten. Brechtel, Brown, Burkhart, Bird, Campbell, Kennedy, Childers, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Edmonds, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles excused, Greer, Green, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Ilway, Yagi, Kasparic, Croker, Crone, Lockhart, Laux, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller excused, Moniz, Nicholas, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Petrov, Korberg, Reeder, Roscoe, Semlick, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Vronish, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 54 aye, 4 no, 2 excused.
Senate File 27, having received the affirmative vote of the members elected to the House, Senate File 27 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having voted on the prevailing side of Senate File 85, I am giving notice of my intention to ask for reconsideration of the third reading vote tomorrow at the end of third reading.
You need to pick a time for today because it's got to be within 10 days of the...
Mr. Speaker, then at the end of the, at the close of business today.
The notice to move for reconsideration is accepted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House stand in recess until 1:30 p.m.
All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no?
No.
Okay, looks like we're going to continue, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. No.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
All those in favor of the motion, please say aye. Those opposed, no?
No.
Would you rather eat lunch? All right. Committee announcements. Chairman Illay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will not meet today at noon. We will meet tomorrow at noon to talk about interim topics.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet tomorrow, March 6th, 15 minutes after adjournment, and we will have a joint committee with the Senate on interim topics. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to announce that the Joint Conference Committee attendees on the Senate file number 5 will meet at the Senate Corporations Office Chambers at 1:15.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9 will meet with a joint meeting with the Senate side at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in H18. Interim topics.
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. jointly with our counterparts in the other chambers in the Senate Judiciary Committee room, and there is a list of proposed topics out that is quite long. If you'd like to see a copy of it and have any input into the prioritization, see me.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment in room 302 to discuss interim topics with the Senate Light Committee.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Two messages. The first message is that the Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources Committee will meet with the Light Committee from the Senate at 12:30 this afternoon for the discussion of interim topics in Senate 15. And secondly, the Conference Committee on Senate File 8 will meet at 1:30 in the Senate Transportation Committee to discuss the Conference of Senate File 8 ethanol credits.
Chairman Childers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3, Revenue, is going to meet jointly tomorrow, 15 minutes after noon recess, in room H11, that's Tuesday, March the 6th, to discuss interim topics. And everybody think highways.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Joint Conference Committee on the House Bill 1 will meet at 1 o'clock in room 204.
Any other announcements? The House will stand in recess until 1:30 p.m.